Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Tell you something right now. The Jaguars should come out to this. They should come out to this right here. As a matter of fact, you know what I'm going to do, RJ Saunders?
What you going to do?
1 o'clock Houston time on Sunday. With apologies to my colleagues at the Jaguars Radio Network, I'm going to have this in my headset when the Jaguars take the field.
Turn up.
Houston, Houston, Houston. 6 in a row for the bad guys. Yeah, they went on a 6-0 streak going back, 8 or 9 years ago as well. They won 12 out of the last 14. So I guess that would be 7 years. Won 6 straight. Jags won a couple, including right there after the hurricane in Houston. And, you know, J.J. Watt ran out with that Texas State flag. It was a cool moment. It felt good for about 30 seconds. And then Calais Campbell and company just pounded him on that afternoon and would win the home matchup as well. But 6 straight have gone the other way, and the Jaguars will do whatever it takes to try to fix that beginning Sunday at 1 o'clock. All right, it's great to have you with us. My name is Rick Ballew alongside RJ Saunders. We're packed here over the next couple of hours. A lot to do tonight. A lot of quarterback talk in our first hour. Former Super Bowl champ Brad Johnson is going to join us in 30 minutes. I went to college with Brad, known him for quite some time. His son is Max Johnson, playing quarterback, as we know, for the Bayou Bengals. Tough loss for them last week out in Los Angeles, losing there in the Rose Bowl to UCLA. Denny Thompson coming up. Want to spend a little bit of time with Denny on some of these college quarterbacks. I mean, every time Denny is on, it's always about Trevor Lawrence and the Jags, but they have not played, as we know, 2 weeks off until this home opener. I want to get into the Anthony Richardson scenario a little bit. I asked him about C.J. Stroud last Thursday. Then we had an opportunity to watch that matchup between Ohio State and Minnesota. You know, Bryce Young at Bama. So a lot of college football coming up quarterback-wise. We'll do that. John Osher at 8, the very latest on the Jags. And they're healthy. And, you know, it's real good news right now. Middle-of-the-week vibe is positive. 7 captains named today. That includes Trevor Lawrence, and, you know, everyone has their way with it on social media. That's too many captains, and 4 of the 7 are brand new captains. Hey, it's the way he wants to do it. I saw the teams around the NFL. They have 6 or 7 captains as well. Whatever, okay? I think it speaks volumes that Trevor Lawrence, by his teammates, was voted in as a captain. And he's never taken a snap in an NFL game, a regular season NFL game. Am I surprised by it? No, not at all. I mean, the way he has handled himself, you know, on the practice field, off the field, he's done all the right things. He appears to be a real good teammate. But there's at times jealousy and let's not hand him the keys immediately. You don't get that. Voted in. And I thought that was pretty interesting today, to see that that happened this soon. I mean, you can think of some great players around here who were not voted in as captains. Jalen Ramsey comes to mind. Jalen's a bad guy. I mean, to compare Jalen to Trevor is a major mistake by me. All right? Trevor Lawrence is everything that embolizes being a true professional, a hard worker, a guy who gets it. Jalen Ramsey's a turd. There's really no other way to say it. Could be a Hall of Fame corner. He's also a Hall of Fame jackass, right? And I was his biggest supporter when he was here. But Jalen quit on you. More importantly, Jalen quit on his teammates. He quit on the Jacksonville Jaguars. So, enough of that. Let's get to the matchup coming up on Monday. You know, this is the first day that it's really sunk in for me. I think yesterday I was just kind of mush. You know, is this one of those, I don't know what it was. I don't know what I had, but it wasn't 100%. And you don't feel good these days. Oh, you got COVID. No, I don't have COVID. I just didn't have it. Not everything was working the way that I wanted it to. And I'm not talking about organs. All right, I'm not talking about my liver or my spleen or any of that type of stuff. I didn't feel myself, okay? And, well, you know what it felt like? It felt like a Monday after a loss. You know that? You know that feeling? You know that awful feeling? Getting up early. What time does your alarm go off? 5:30, 6, 6:15, the alarm goes off, and bam, it's Monday morning. You're still fighting a little bit of a hangover. First thing you think about before you even go to the restroom, Jaguars lost the game, and you got to start your work week. All of a sudden, you hear your honey. She's like, "Honey, I want eggs and I want bacon. I want extra bacon. I want coffee." We get it. And you're just like, "Oh my God, I got to go through this again this week." That's the way it felt yesterday for me. I do not want to feel that way this Monday. This game has major importance to me. Others will say, "Pipe down, Baloo. It's one of 17. And this isn't college football. This is the NFL. You can lose this. You can lose next week to Denver. You can lose the week after to Arizona. It doesn't matter. Look at the Super Bowl champs of a year ago. They were 7-5 out of the gate down the road in Tampa. It feels different around here for so many reasons. Okay? First off, right now, Houston is a mess. Okay? I mean, complete, absolute dumpster fire. They have dealt now with terrible decisions by their organization. They have moved their best players. Deshaun Watson's not going to play. All right, we heard from Nick Cesario yesterday, the general manager, who, of course, came over from New England. I like David Culley a little bit. I mean, he's been all over the place in the NFL. He was the former passing coordinator in Baltimore. He's got a good past. He's saying all the right things. He just doesn't have the weapons. Do you realize that Chris Conley is a starting wide receiver in Houston? Chris Conley, Chris third down in a drop. Conley is on the other side of Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks is a very good football player, but he's always injured. They're going to try to run the football right at Jacksonville. And I believe the Jaguars have done enough to really improve on that particular number from a year ago. They were terrible last year, 153.3 yards a game. The last 3 years combined, they're 31st in the NFL in yards allowed on the ground. More than 136 a game. That has to change, especially in this division. You know, when you look at Tennessee and Indy and how they're going to run the ball. Four times at Jacksonville, home and away this year. Not as much here with Houston, but you still think with a plethora of backs, they got four that they like, that is how they're going to try to win a football game. This matchup for Jacksonville is one that I've looked at from every possible angle, and I've never been one of those who does matchups where you go position group by position group. That's just never really been my angle, you know, comparing the Jaguars offensive line to the Houston defensive line, comparing the Houston pass rush to Jaguars pass protection and doing it the whole way through receivers with DBs. You understand where I go? I've never really done that. But I've been looking at the roster, and I've been looking at the depth chart, man, and it just appears to me that right now Houston has arguably the worst roster in the NFL. And, you know, they brought in more than 50 players since David Culley has been there. Most of these free agents are guys who have been in the league for 5 years or longer. This is not a real young team in Houston like it's a real young team here in Jacksonville. What they're dealing with there are guys who are off-the-street free agents, in some cases reclamation projects, and guys whose better years are behind them. You know, last opportunity to try to make it work. It's not a great roster. It's not a great football team. And I understand it's game one, but the Jaguars right now are in a perfect position to get this thing rolling, to go on out there and snap this six-game losing streak against Houston and then get ready for everything that is going to happen a week later with Denver coming in here to the bank. And, you know, it's all about, for me, setting up what is next, always looking forward, embracing today, but always, you know, peeking forward. And can you imagine how great it's going to be a week from Sunday in Jacksonville if the Jags can get a road victory? Now, you can make the case that it will be great even if they do lose, but no. This is a football game that they should win. And I'm going to be so incredibly interested in how they're going to handle things here offensively. You know, you script plays, and I've never, you know, I don't think like a coach, obviously. I think like a host. And there's a lot of things that coaches do that I don't agree with. But I have never been a coach, so I respect the fact that they know football a lot better than I do, and at least they know it differently than I do. But that whole scripted plays nonsense is something that I have never been a believer in. Because what if you're on defense first and Houston marches, you know, 75 yards downfield and takes 7 minutes off the clock? Are you still going to come back and do what you did earlier? Or what if you pick off Ty Taylor? Now, all of a sudden, you got the ball first and 10 at Houston's 30. And you got to go 30. Are you going to still stick to the script? That's why I've never been a big fan of it. But I want to see the Jags come out and take some chances. Yes, they'll run the ball with James Robinson. That much we know. But I do want to see Trevor Lawrence settle in and throw the football downfield. I would much rather have him make a mistake and him turn the ball over that way as opposed to dinking and dunking and intermediate stuff and run the ball and you're three and out with punts. That is what I don't want. I want to see this team take some chances, and I hope that is the case. All right, we got a lot to do in this very first hour. Brad Johnson coming up in 25 minutes right now. Let's get ready for Denny Thompson of 1010XL and 92.5 FM. He is up, and he goes into the night with Rick Belew.
Now, the quarterback whisperer, Denny Thompson.
Okay, bring it in.
Let's go into the night with Rick Belew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yeah, Denny Thompson's in. Into the night, that is, with Rick Belew. Welcome, sir. How are you?
I am fantastic, Rick. How are you doing, man?
And I'm okay. I'm okay. Everything's okay. And I'm starting to get real excited about this weekend. I want to keep this primarily as, you know, college football, since the Jags didn't play this past weekend. But I'm just interested in your opinion. I'm sure you're not surprised that Trevor Lawrence was announced as a quarterback, announced as the captain, one of the seven today. But that doesn't always happen for a first rounder rolling into the league, being voted on by his teammates to be one of those guys.
No, you're exactly right. I think it's actually, it says a lot. It says a lot more than what I think most people want to read into it. But, you know, you saw the trip that he took with receivers over the summer. I've gotten a chance to see how he interacts, you know, on a personal level with the teammates. He's super prepared. He walks around like a vet. I mean, we've seen it, you know, at all the training camp practices. Not like he's wide-eyed. He makes the rookie mistakes, yes. And he had, you know, a handful of bad practices. But he certainly comes out there and looks just like a veteran in every way. And it must be that his leadership is on point, too, which is, I think, unanimous what we heard, you know, leading up to the draft from everybody, is just how much of a natural-born servant leader he actually is.
Mm-hmm. You know, things are going to change throughout the course of the year. We all know that, and we get that. And I really believe Urban Meyer and the Jaguars would love to be able to run James Robinson right at Houston and take that pressure off of Lawrence. But what do you envision with him in game one as far as what he does with the football downfield? How many long throws, 15 yards or more, do you believe that he will toss it? And I'm not saying if they're trailing, obviously that changes, in the second half. But I'm just saying if it's a game in which things are going the way that Jag fans want it to go.
Yeah, I actually want to see them be super aggressive in this, Rick. Like, I want to see – this is a game that they're supposed to win, and there's not many of those. I think this may be the only one as of now. That they're supposed to win. They're trending up. Houston's trending down. I want to see a team that comes out and runs a tempo offense, and that's not like what UCF or those guys. I'm not talking about that, but a good pace, good solid pace offense, take shots downfield, utilizes the play action game. And I want to see how this looks because I think this is the chance they have to do that. And I want to see them step on the throat of the Houston Texans because I don't think that Houston even expects much out of their own team. You just can't let those teams stick around. And if you're going to be the dominant player in this, take your shots early, man. And let's see 7 or 8 throws in the course of a game travel, further than 20 yards.
I couldn't agree more. And, as opposed to 3 and outs, which Jaguar fans have seen now forever, I would rather have them throw the football downfield. And if you make a mistake and you get picked off, okay, it's going to shorten the field as opposed to a punt. I understand that. But I at least want this team to take some chances now that they have a guy that can spin it.
And for the longest time, we've talked about separation from receivers and how Jacksonville's receivers, over the past couple of years, they haven't gotten a lot of separation. Well, you've got a quarterback now where that really shouldn't matter. He's talented enough where he should find those separation points. He should find those windows to put the ball in. And I believe we do have that guy. Like I believe he is that guy. So you outside of protection issues, you have no excuse not to be aggressive in your play calling in this game.
Talking quarterbacks with our quarterback whisperer, that is Denny Thompson. He goes into the night with Rick Ballew. All right, let's begin in Gainesville. Let's start with their starting quarterback. Even though all the hype right now is on Anthony Richardson, we'll get there momentarily. Let's begin with Emory Jones. What did you like? What did you dislike with his performance on Saturday?
I liked a lot, actually. I was in Charlotte, so I didn't get to watch the game live. So I went back and watched it. And to listen to everybody, you would think that he just played absolutely horribly. And I didn't see that. I like the command that he had, the confidence that he had, and that's how Emory's always been. I've known Emory since he was in high school. I know we're going to get to it, but Emory is in that perfect storm right now. He's got this guy behind him, and I work very closely with Anthony, so just to put that out there so everybody knows that I'm not just pumping up my own guy. Anthony is a freak, Rick. He is like... I really can't put into words, but I have said multiple times on our airwaves, the most talented guy that I've ever worked with, as far as baseline talent is concerned. And it's just a matter of time. I'm not saying it's happened yet, where maturity catches up with talent, or knowledge catches up with talent, because he is a very smart guy. And the unfortunate player in all this is Emory Jones, because it has nothing to do with him.
Yep.
He can go out and throw for 350 yards this week.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to matter. He's still got, the most exciting quarterback to come through Florida since Tim Tebow just waiting behind him.
Yeah, it's got
so I hope people could differentiate that.
It's got a little bit of the Chris Leak Tebow feel, but I mean, Chris Leak has the most passing yardage in the history of Florida football, or at least he did when he left. And, Emory Jones, it has not been the same case yet for him. 17 is 27 for 113. All right, let's talk about Richardson now. And obviously I saw what he did, particularly with his feet. And is he a faster Cam Newton? How would you define him, when he comes to running the football?
He's what I think Cam Newton would be if he was coming up now and had the access to, all the things the guys have now. Like we don't ever talk about that when we talk about older players and we make comparisons. He's faster. He's got more resources at his disposal. And I'm talking about at the university level, right? I mean, you've been in locker rooms now compared to even 15 years ago. The technology is completely different. He's he's special. I think that's the best way to put it. I was talking to Brian Johnson, who's with the Eagles now, former offensive coordinator at Florida. And I was talking with him about a week and a half ago, and we were talking about Anthony. And when they were recruiting Anthony and Carson, everybody thought that they were trying to pick Carson. They weren't. They were trying to get both.
Mm-hmm.
That was the goal. They never stopped recruiting Anthony. And it struck me the other day because Brian said, hey, have you talked to Anthony? I was like, yeah, I just talked to him. He goes, man, that guy, and this is an NFL coach, but that guy is generationally good. And we save that for guys like Trevor Lawrence. But to hear, you know, a quarterback coach in the NFL who's got experience with him, and I'm just talking to him as a friend, just throw that out there, it stuck with me. And he is. He is that good. That talented. We don't know how good he is yet.
Right.
But as far as baseline talent, man, he's going to be a problem for anybody that lines up on the other side.
Can he throw the football?
He can throw the tar out of it. We had the best arm at Elite 11, best arm strength when he went through there. I was telling the story yesterday on Frangie. Junior to senior year in high school, we were working that summer specifically on his passing game.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, man, this is gonna take a lot of work. Rick, it didn't. It didn't, man. What usually takes people 6 months to really dial in and feel and replicate took him a couple of weeks. And he's spinning it all over the yard, and he's very accurate. He understands the mechanics of throwing a football. He's a really smart kid. So I'm excited to see, because sometimes not all that translates onto the football field. I'm excited to see if it does for Anthony Richards.
Is this, you know, is this another Trevor Lawrence, Kelly Bryant situation?
If you want to beat Alabama, I mean, I as much as I like Emory, if you want to have a chance, I shouldn't say beat Alabama. Everybody wants to beat Alabama. If you want to have a chance against Alabama, I don't think you have it with Emory. I think you got to throw something out there that, you know, they can know what you're doing, and you have a chance.
Uh-huh.
And that's Anthony. That's yeah. Anthony. So if you really are what you say you are, which is a playoff contending program year after year, sometimes you got to make those decisions that kind of take you over that hump. And I think this is one that has to be made.
I want to get your comments as we talk with Denny Thompson here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Your opinion on, you know, Mackenzie Milton, because the whole world is upset that he wasn't put in earlier. It was not a great game for Jordan Travis. He had three picks. Let me start with this, and this was my opinion, that if you played him against Notre Dame early, he would have gotten crushed. Okay, it was a totally different Notre Dame defense with 5.5 minutes to go in the game compared to what they were doing when the game began. Agree or disagree with that?
I completely agree. I couldn't agree more. I was there on Saturday or on Sunday night, and I've got a great relationship with that staff at Florida State. And I can tell you that's the thought, right, is we don't know how good they don't know how good they are on the offensive line. So forget the knee injury for a second. You may have to generate your own offense. Now, it didn't work out that way, but I completely get the thought of, if I'm getting pressure from their front four, why would I put in the guy who's less athletic? So I think, you know, it worked. It didn't really work out. They lost, but it worked out in a sense because it was cool to see. But I also completely understand the reasoning on why they stayed with Georgia.
Yeah, All right, final thoughts from you. Let's begin with Georgia. That offense is struggling right now. We know that. JT Daniels, one of the few returning quarterbacks for top 10 teams in all of college football. Your thought on what's going on there at Georgia?
You want breaking news?
Yes.
I don't think JT Daniels is starting this week.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Carson Beck this week. Yeah, word is that JT's got some type of injury. And so I think Carson will be trotting out there to start the game on Saturday against whoever it is. I think South Alabama or UAB, one of those teams. So I'm excited. I'm on my way back right now from Atlanta, from Georgia Tech. And right when I get home, now it looks like I'm going to be turning around and going to Athens to watch Carson get his first start. So super excited. But to your point, to answer specifically about last Saturday night, I was at that game also. It was in Charlotte. I thought JT played an awful game. I thought JT had some opportunities that DJ on the other side of Clemson didn't have because Georgia's defense is an NFL defense. And I didn't think JT looked very good at all. He didn't look poised to me. It looked like, you know, when he took shots, everything seemed to be, you know, a little late or a little behind the receiver. He was just a little bit off, and maybe he was injured going to that game. I don't know, because it's unlike him. He usually throws a very beautiful ball.
Mm-hmm. All right. Interesting. Wrap it with Bryce Young. What did you see there?
What is there not to like about that kid? I think, was it on your show last week? I don't remember now. One of them, I said, he's kind of like a combination of Tua and Mac Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's kind of what they have, which is kind of scary. And I thought he showed that the other day. I thought, you know, he's quick in the pocket. He's very flinchy and sudden. But at the same time, man, he's accurate with the football, too, and seems to make good decisions. I mean, you know, the rich just keep getting richer in college football.
Yeah. I mean, four touchdowns, he just crushed Miami. It was pretty scary to watch.
I know you hated to see that.
Hey, man, I just sat back and I was counting them up. That's one, two, that's three in a row on the other side now for the U. Three straight losses.
Can I ask you something? Can I turn this interview around?
Sure.
Where are you at with Florida State right now? Do you come out of that game excited? Do you come out of that game hopeful? Where are you at?
I come out of that game thinking that team would have quit last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, maybe even 4 years ago, down 18. They showed an incredible amount of fight, and I think they made some serious coaching mistakes, especially on defense. I mean, blitzing on 3rd and 17, not having a guy within 25 yards of Michael Mayer, the tight end on that first drive. I mean, everyone talks about the fourth down play, but I thought, and this is my biggest concern right now with Florida State, because I think Mike Norvell is starting to get the players, and he will next year. Got to be better in-game coaches. That's where I'm at. No moral victory here, brother. None at all. I mean,
yeah,
but
did you go? Were you there?
No. No.
You know, this is coming from a Florida fan. It was special, man. You know, the whole Bobby Bowden thing.
Yeah.
And I've been to a lot of games at Doak. There was something special about the other night. And, you know, I guess it's easy for me to say by not being a Florida State fan, but I think we all agree college football is better when Florida State.
Oh, yeah.
And man, I got to tell you, they worked their butt off for every yard in that game. And like you just said, I think you're right. I think 4 years ago, even, that's a four touchdown game.
No doubt about it. As a matter of fact, coming up right now, we're going to talk with former Seminole quarterback Brad Johnson. He's coming up right now.
Mr. TikTok.
Yeah, he's on TikTok.
Yeah, he is the trick shot artist on TikTok.
Oh, I'll ask him about that.
Yeah, you need to go check it out. Like, I mean, it's impressive, some of the stuff he's doing.
He used to take my money at Docs.
Very good quarterback.
At Docs. Hey, Danny, great stuff as always. Thank you.
Yeah, man. Have a good night.
Safe travels home. That is Denny Thompson. Coming up next, let's talk with former Seminole quarterback Brad Johnson. Oh, yeah, he also won a Super Bowl for the Bucs.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we take off for Houston Saturday. We'll have a full report coming up. John Osher will join me here in 20 minutes. Give you the very latest on the Jaguars and Texans. Look forward to getting out there. Hopefully the Jags can snap that 6-game losing streak to Houston. Brad Johnson, ladies and gentlemen, actually went to school, Florida State, the exact same time as Brad Johnson. Had a great career there, and of course he went on to win a Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He goes into the night with Rick Ballew. Brad, how you been?
I'm doing great, Rick. How you doing, man? Appreciate you having me on the show.
It's been a little while, Brad. I feel bad. My brother plays golf every week with Peter Tom Willis, and I go to Tampa and knock it around with those guys. And Casey Weldon comes by. But what are you in? You're in Athens, Georgia, correct?
Yep. Up in Athens, Georgia. Been here for about 12 years now.
Yeah. And, you know, your son is obviously doing very well at LSU. What about you? I know you're a TikTok star. But you're also what you coach in high school ball?
Yeah. I've been coaching high school football here for a while. Mm-hmm. Coach Max and Jake, you know, all the youth teams and middle school teams, and been to high school here in Athens, Georgia. The last 2 years, went to the state championship. We lost in the finals both years. Lost in a heartbreaker in overtime last year, but we're 3-0 this year. I'm trying to make another run at it and see how it goes. But I'm the water boy, equipment guy, and I'm the QB coach on the side, you know?
Yeah.
So having fun being with the kids.
Having fun, and that's the way to go about it, talking with Brad Johnson. Are you surprised, Brad, with the way things have totally changed as far as quarterback play, college football, the NFL? I mean, I think about when you came in and that consistency that Bowden had where he would start redshirt juniors. I mean, whether it's your son last year as a true freshman or a guy like Trevor Lawrence here getting ready to start game one in the NFL, is that a little bit of a surprise to you?
You know, when going back in the day, I mean, I remember Coach Bobby Bowden in my house in 1986, and, you know, I was asking to be redshirted. We, you know, you wanted that fifth year, you know, and then with the goal then, there was Danny McManus and Peter Tom Willis and Chip Ferguson, and then I was coming with Casey Weld. We were going to kind of work, but we were going to wait our turn and hopefully have a chance at our junior year, or, you know, sometimes it was your senior year.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of wait your turn is what it was. And, you know, nowadays, now if you're not playing your freshman year, you might be transferring.
Right.
There's really not many guys getting redshirted. If you're not out in the league by your third year, you know, they're bringing in another kid that's come to take your place as a true freshman. So a kid like Trevor Lawrence, you know, he's been a superstar since middle school. I think I'm making up his record. His record's 105
mm-hmm.
since high school and college, and won two or three state championships and played in two or three national championships. And it's different for every quarterback, Rick. It really is. Some guys need a chance to develop, whether it's in college. And some guys, you know, you throw them to the wolves too fast, it could scar them.
Yeah.
And I look at every, you know, with Trevor coming in, his first pick of the draft, there's a reason why he is. And he's a kid, if they feel like he's ready to play, then you play him. A kid like Trey Lance, you know what? He's 20 years old. Last year didn't have a year because of COVID. He might need a year to develop. And when I look at a lot of quarterbacks, you know, that have won Super Bowls now, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, myself, Drew Brees, Steve Young, I mean, you know, Carson Palmer, Michael Vick, the list goes on, Kurt Warner, Eli Manning, maybe not Peyton Manning,
mm-hmm.
but that first year, Peyton Manning's year, he led the league in interceptions, and he'll
right.
tell you that, you know.
Even Mahomes right now, Brad, even Mahomes.
Yeah. And Mahomes, that was Kansas City. They were genius. Alex Smith, a winner. I mean, pure winner, pure pro. How to be a pro? And Mahomes, he talks about it to this day. So there's a big deal. You bring in a rookie. You take a kid like Mark Sanchez. Like he was 6-7 years, had six different coordinators. Baker Mayfield, I think he's in his fourth or fifth year now. He's in his third or fourth head coach. Like, and maybe they got to stabilize. I think the greatness is maybe he comes in with Urban Meyer and Darrell Bevell and they grow together.
Yeah.
But each quarterback is different. And this is a long story, you know, but it all depends on the kid and it all depends on the quarterback, you know, how they can mature and handle things.
Brad Johnson, our guest, won a Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yeah, you know, I've asked a lot of people this, Brad, and I'm really trying to figure it out. You mentioned Coach Bowden. You know, I remember when I was over there covering the team, and even before that when I was going to school, I mean, he'd bring in 25 freshmen, and maybe two would play. The rest would redshirt. But now they're playing immediately, and that includes the quarterback position. And, you know, I look through history, and there's always been great players. I'm just trying to figure out why it is now that – look at in college football, all these freshmen that are under center, it's kind of bizarre to me, and I wish I had an answer for it.
Well, I will say this. I do think kids are developed a little bit better now. From, you know, I think they're playing in, you know, you're playing with check with me systems in middle school and spread offenses, and they're playing more year-round football, and kids are throwing the ball. They're going to more camps. You're playing more video games. You're just seeing things. It's constant. You're having, you know, you have spring practice. You have the summer workouts. I don't know if that existed as much when we grew up. I do think kids are further along in their development heading into college than we were. I didn't know cover three or cover two or three step or five step, and we didn't know a whole lot coming into it besides, you know, get back there and sling it in high school. So I think kids are just way more developed. And then I think the same way when they go from college to pro. The difference with what's going on now is the RPO game and guys playing from gun. You don't see that many kids now that can take a snap from underneath center, whether it's a victory snap or you know, those kind of things. So a lot of the pro teams now, they're having to develop, you know, kids on how to take a snap, or maybe they just they scrap all those plays and kind of go back to a little bit of what, you know, these quarterbacks are doing in college a little bit. The game has changed a little bit.
No question about that. Brad Johnson, our guest. Brad, what did you see with the alma mater a couple of nights ago? And when that thing shakes out, what do you believe Florida State's going to do at quarterback?
Yeah, you know, I'm excited for Florida State. You know, it's been rocky for 3 years. It's been rocky, to say the least. And but I think you feel like there's a heartbeat that's taking place. They're doing a great job in recruiting. Obviously, the other night, lost a heartbreaker to Notre Dame in overtime. But you felt like, you know, the stands were full. You felt like we had a chance to win against a big opponent. And, you know, came up a little bit short, but you feel like there's hope. And that's a great thing. Who knows what will happen with the quarterback situation. Coach Norville, they'll figure that out, whether it's this week or throughout the season. But you felt like quarterback play was good enough to win. And that's the exciting part of it. And the Noel Nation, it'll be back.
You know, Brad, you know, and there's some frustration on my end and some criticism. That's just the way that I am. But the biggest positive for me, they're down 18 points. In my opinion, that team quits a year ago. They quit two years ago. They quit 3 years ago. They did not quit on Sunday night.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting because Coach Norvell, he's reached back out to a lot of former players. And I did a segment a couple of weeks ago with their team. I just did a video. And he went back and he had the coaches talk about former players. Who was the great DBs that played at Florida State? It might have been Terrell Buckley or Deion Sanders. And kids will talk about tradition, but they don't know the tradition. You know, that we played 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's get to meet Deion. Let's get to meet Brad Johnson. Let's get to meet Chris Winkie. Let's get to meet Charlie Ward and find out what made the program so great at that time. And they were doing, what I'm saying is they were doing like a history lesson of what made, you know, the 14-year run of being in the top four back in the 80s and 90s. What made those teams so great? And the thing I talked about was obviously competition and what took place on the practice field and the who could dominate on the practice field. And then you carry that over to game nights. But I think Coach Norvell is bringing that back and the heartbeat back of what made Florida State so great was obviously what takes place in practice, but bringing back great players and bringing back that pride that we're not going to give up, that we're going to represent the Noel Nation. We're going to get this thing back and we're going to go back and play in big bowls. And that's the standard.
Yeah, you hope so. You hope that, and he's starting to get some kids in, some recruits in, and you know, I think he was hurt by COVID. He didn't have a lot of networking and connections, you know, when he came over from Memphis, and it hurt him a year ago, but he's starting to get those guys in. All right, as I let you go, Brad, final thought on all this. I mean, around here, it's Trevor Lawrence. He's a generational quarterback. He was voted in today by his teammates as a captain, but you learn so much as you grow in this league. Right out of the gate, Houston on Sunday, what do you believe this team will ask out of Trevor Lawrence as far as being a, you know, a difference maker, throwing the ball downfield? Do you bring him along slowly? Do you throw him right in? What do you think is going to happen?
I don't know. I haven't been keeping up with it, but I would tell you, go play. Go play to win, you know? And I would tell the fans, I say, you know what? Be patient. That's a 1-15 team last year. There's a reason why they were drafted number one. It's going to take Trevor playing great, but it's going to take other players playing great too. You have a new coaching staff, a whole new regime, and they're going to have to grow. They're going to grow together. But that's the greatness. They are coming in together. It's not a coach that's getting ready to be fired that had to make a first round pick. It's not that. They're going to build the tradition there, build the program. That's what Urban Meyer does. But Trevor's a great player, but it's going to take other players around him, and it's going to be tough for Trevor. I mean, he's getting ready to face some adversity. You're going to lose games in the NFL. He's not used to losing from Cartersville High School or Clemson. But that's what the NFL does to you. But there's a reason why he's the first pick of the draft. And I'd tell everybody, get behind him. He's a great player and great person.
Yep. All right. Well, certainly the hope is here. And it's great that football is back. Hey, Brad, always a lot of fun. And I just got to point this out, that the year that you went on and won the Super Bowl, all through the end of the year and all through the playoffs, with all your interview requests, you came on every night with me in Chicago, and I never forgot that. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you coming on right now.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it, Rick.
Always,
thank you, buddy.
Always good talking with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
There he goes, Brad Johnson. Good stuff there. And, man, what an unbelievable story, okay? When you look at Brad Johnson, we're not talking about the first player in the draft. And I was at the game in 1990 in Miami, my junior year, when mid-game, Brad Johnson was benched for Casey Weldon. And I don't think Florida State lost again until wide right won during the 91 season. They would win the remainder of those games. That 91 season was pretty interesting. They went to Ann Arbor and beat Michigan 51-31. Of course, Michigan would never return the favor and come to Tallahassee. But they won some other big games that year. They knocked off LSU. They knocked off Auburn, if I remember correctly. And, you know, that was arguably Florida State's best team. He just mentioned Terrell Buckley. Buckley was on his heels when Gino Toretta hit, I think it was it Horace Copeland on 4th and 6? They retired that man's jersey. He allowed a first down on 4th and 6. How do you retire that guy's jersey? And the biggest moment he failed did Terrell Buckley. And, you know, Miami would go on to win that. Florida State, again, terrible coaching coming in. They would kick it on third down from a bad hash. And just, you know, classic choke job when they should have been able to pull that off. But look at Brad Johnson, man. I think that was back when the draft was like 14 rounds. He went in the 9th round. He was the 227th pick selected. I mean, there's been all this talk about Tom Brady winning in the 6th round. And of course, he's won 7 of them. Brad Johnson was selected in the 9th round. And he won a lot of games in Minnesota. And then he went to London in the midst of his Minnesota career, when I want to say it was Randall Cunningham who was the starter. He came back and played with Washington. Then, of course, he went off to Tampa Bay and won a Super Bowl, then wrapped things up with both Minnesota and Dallas. I mean, when it was all said and done, this guy played for 15 years. Unbelievable. 166 touchdowns, 29,054 yards, and a real good guy. Of course, he played basketball on the Pat Kennedy basketball teams that went to the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, you know, with Charlie Ward and Sam Cassell and Bob Sura and Douglas Edwards and those guys. So anyway, good stuff there. Good to catch up with Brad Johnson. Hopefully you did enjoy it. All right, let's get to the Jags. Coming up next, we talk with John Osher. He goes into the night with Rick Ballew right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, good stuff there from Brad Johnson. I think he made a good point. I think today's, you know, just the way that these kids have developed. That's why we're seeing these young quarterbacks play here in the NFL, but certainly in college football as well. Powerhouses. That was not the case back in the day when I went to school with Brad Johnson at the same time. Of course, he won a Super Bowl with the Buccaneers. The NFL actually begins tomorrow night. Bucks and Cowboys. We are less than 24 hours away. I will join John Osher this weekend in Houston, where the Jaguars will try to snap their six-game losing streak against the Texans. Johnny O, how are you?
Your Brad Johnson story sounded, Rick, like the old joke. How many combined Super Bowl wins do Rick Ballew and Brad Johnson have? like the Tommy Aaron, Hank Aaron home run joke.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say how many national championships did Brad Johnson and Rick Ballew have, and the answer would have been the same. Zero.
Yeah,
zero, but we lost about three of them while we were in school together, no doubt about it. Hey, first things first for the Jags, they're a healthy bunch. I mean, after having some issues, including the offensive line, where four-fifths of it did not go 2 weeks ago against Dallas. Not on the injury report, so therefore, it appears they're good to go on Sunday.
Yeah, and that's all by design. I mean, obviously, one of the pluses of not having a fourth preseason game is you don't have that final game. I know people would say, well, you weren't going to play your starters anyway. But you also, without that, you also don't play marginal guys. You know, you don't play, I don't know how many guys would have made it, maybe 21, 22 guys might be on the team who played in that final game. None of those guys are dinged. So I think it's Trey Herndon out still, obviously, and then Tyson Campbell limited. You'd expect him to play. We'll see. That's what you want. I mean, a little credit to Urban Meyer. You've got to give it where it's due. The whole strength and conditioning, to try to reduce soft tissue, knock on whatever this thing sitting next to me is. So far, so good. They're healthy, and it won't last long. But that's what you want.
You know, Urban echoed this. I believe it was today. It might have been these. You know, they all kind of run together, but towards the end of camp. And I understand camp's gone, but the point being that if you can run, it really changes everything. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is under the microscope here, but if they can come out and really run the football with James Robinson, it changes the entire landscape of the game. That's the bread and butter going in. This is a situation right now in Houston where they're dealing with a lot of distractions, and frankly, it's a different-looking team. I read your piece you did there with John McClain, the interesting points he mentioned about free agency. But, to me, that's the biggest part of it all. Can they run the football at Houston?
Well, it's absolutely, because that's what they want to do every game. And, I've said a couple of times this week, the ideal formula for this team would be to have James Robinson or some combination of about 115, 120 yards rushing. And to have Trevor Lawrence around 220 to 250 passing, with 60 of those yards, one big play to DJ Chark over the top that was set up by good running all day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people would say, well, that's every team's formula. Yeah, I mean, any team would love to do that. But really, right now, the way they've built this, they're depending unbelievably on their faith in the offensive line to be what it is, or to be what they believe it is, and they want to control clock, run, et cetera, et cetera. The other side of that is that's exactly what the Texans want to do. So in a lot of ways, this game I expect to come down to who does what they want to do better. In this case, it's run and stop the run. The Jaguars were pretty good running it last year. The Texans really weren't. Neither team was good at stopping it. So whoever comes out on top there, I think, wins Sunday. And I don't really believe. I get that most Jaguars fans are putting this as a W. You lost 15 in a row to end last year. There's no such thing as a sure thing.
No, there definitely is not. And I'm glad you said that about the Jags. If you look at them, they averaged 94.9 yards a game. That was towards the bottom of the league. But they were forced to pass in the second half. If you look at first half yardage, and, if they were in games, that would have increased dramatically. And that, again, it has to be a huge part of the thought process going into this season.
I think anybody watching it, there's a faction of people who are going to say, well, they suck at everything. They're 1-15. Okay, let's grant you that. But if you watch the game, if they could do anything really well last year, you felt like it was when the game was even or they were close. You felt like they could run about as well as they've been able to run in a while.
Mm-hmm.
The first part of 2017. So now I would tell you some of that was probably because teams knew you could give them James Robinson a little bit. And if you took away Gardner Minshew, James Robinson probably wasn't going to beat you enough to have them lose the game as poorly as the quarterback was playing. So there's some of that, but you know, I think they can hang their hat on, you know, they have to believe this is a pretty good running offensive line, and I think they're going to be hanging their hat on it early.
John Osher, our guest, senior writer, Jaguars.com. I didn't know this until I read the article that you posted yesterday with John McClain from the Houston Chronicle, but my goodness, a turnover. And there's been a large one here, as we know, in Jacksonville, although it's a youthful turnover. Not the
right,
case.
Different.
Not the case in Houston. 53 players, all but seven are guys who have had at least 5 years of experience in the league.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's when you, in trying to analyze this game all week, I've been trying to get to sort of the gist. And it's hard to get to the gist because of this. The Texans have beaten the Jaguars six straight times, right? Well, you know, on Jaguars drive time this morning, we were showing clips of Deshaun Watson. And I was kind of laughing, thinking, well, those clips are meaningless. And when you think about it, anything from the past with this game almost feels meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody really talks about the 6-0.
Right.
You know, the Jaguars are so different. New coach, new quarterback. Texans, new coach, new quarterback. But not only that, dramatically different rosters. You know, the Texans have done it a little bit like the Jaguars did it first year under Caldwell, meaning sort of they're getting to the point where they're cutting to the bone. They're going to wait 1 year before they really start building. I think you read that in the article I did with John. They're thinking next year's draft is going to be where they really start putting the pedal to the metal. So this is a weird Texans team to try to gauge. One thing before we close, you know, people who think this is an easy win, one factor is all these veterans the Texans have, they're an older team matching up against a younger team with a lot of guys playing their first game. That's why I don't think this is anything close to a walk. Plus the fact that week one's always weird in the NFL. I mean,
yeah.
This to me is not one. If this was week three, I might feel a little better. If the Texans had played a couple of games as poorly as people think they will, I would believe it a little more. But, you know, in the NFL, until you show me you're bad, you're not bad.
So that's all the makings of a quick game. I think both teams would like to run.
Got a flight to catch, Rick. Let's go.
I mean, and there's been some COVID issues along that offensive line in Houston with Charlie Heck. And, you know, Laramie Tunsil is now back from it. But you wonder about his conditioning. But, you know, Mark Ingram, Philip Lindsay, David Johnson, they're going to try to run it as well. And I like what the Jaguars have done with the run defense. I think they're going to win that one-on-one matchup. Urban Meyer was pretty expressive about it today. What about Tyrod Taylor? He continues to be an underrated quarterback in this league, but he can be dangerous.
Well, he's underrated, and I think the big thing is when you blitz, you want to get home. And this team's going to blitz a lot, but he can extend plays much the way that you know, Deshaun Watson can do. And, you know, guys like this, experienced runaround guys who can escape, who can create, I don't know that Taylor, if he plays 16 games, is going to win 10 of them. But, you know, every few weeks, the guy who plays like this is going to make enough plays to beat you. He can get you 5 or 6 playing this way. John McClain, by the way, doesn't think he'll play the whole season. He thinks David Mills will come in and play later once they start realizing it's a build. But, yeah, veteran guys like this who are dangerous, or veteran guys like this who believe themselves are always dangerous, and I always go back to this, Rick, until a team, meaning the players on that team, believe they're out of it, they're dangerous. And in week one, no NFL team thinks they're out of it.
No. So
as long as teams keep believing, remember the Jaguars last year, were sort of dangerous until week 11 or 12 because players don't ever think they're out of it. They don't think they're bad. And they're pros. So the Texans aren't going into this game thinking, well, the Jaguars fans think we're going to get blown out, so we're going to get blown out. To me, this is one that goes into the fourth quarter.
Let's wrap with this, and it's my biggest concern. Double team Chris Conley Sunday at 1?
Every once in a while, Rick, you get me. And you got me on that one. But I do think, on a serious note, Brandon Cooks can beat you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so they're not without guys who can beat you. The running back, you know, you mentioned – Carlos Hyde was still with this team. You would have the oldest running back ever to play on the Texans. Mm-hmm. This is an older running back group. But again, week one, those guys aren't worn down yet. So there's some guys who can make some plays. What you don't want if you're the Jags is to be going in with 6-7 minutes to go in the game, have the Texans have the ball, and a bunch of guys over there who've been there before. So it would behoove them to put the game away if they can.
All right. This one is an honest question, and we will wrap with this. Duke Johnson, one of the two call-ups on Sunday, and with him, Tyron Johnson, Jacob Hollister, too early for any of those three to really contribute, or can you see one or perhaps more making a play or two on Sunday?
Maybe Duke Johnson too early because he just got here, but I asked Urban on Monday, I followed up somebody else's question with, you know, Johnson, I mean, I'm sorry, wide receiver Taylor, they're coming in so fast.
Right.
Tyron Johnson. And a Hollister, it certainly sounded like they think those guys will play. You know, they got here last week, there's a whole week to prepare. The speed, Urban talks so much about speed, he doesn't want to play, that was one of the best quotes he's had since he's been here. Doesn't want to have an offense, doesn't want to know an offense without deep speed. If you can run and you're healthy, I got to figure Irvin's going to get you in the game and take a chance with you. So I think he does. I think he does get a chance this week, and I think Hollister gets a chance this week.
Folks, make sure you read everything from John Osher and company. Just go to Jaguars.com, particularly the piece he did yesterday with John McClain on the opponent focus. John, always a lot of fun. Thank you so much. See you here, or if not, in Houston on Saturday.
Double team Chris Thomas.
There he goes. Take care. John Osher, ladies and gentlemen, senior writer. I really, you know, personally have a lot of respect for Chris Conley. But, boy, he dropped some big balls last year. I mean, wide open. And he would drop them. You know, I know I've had three straight interviews, so as far as opinions and things that you want to express, that's kind of dimmed. We're going to crank that up right now. The best way to get a hold of us is 641-1010 on the text line. You can also get me on Twitter, Ballou, BALLOU1010XL. I noticed earlier today that people are going crazy over the Andrew Wingard situation. He is listed right now as the starter at strong safety. And, you know, obviously I think the future is Andre Sisco, and I happen to be big on Daniel Thomas. Wingard's a special teams guy, but he's gotten really beaten in coverage. And, you know, people are just going back and forth. I think his dad got involved with it a little bit earlier today. So sometimes social media, you know, the streets of Twitter, you know. Like I said, I'm glad I live out in Bartram. I don't have to deal with the mean streets of Nocatee. I don't have to deal with the 210 Mafia. At times, though, you can get beaten up on the streets of Twitter. And that was going crazy today with Andrew Wingard. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. Is he going to actually start and play for the Jaguars? I'd be surprised if that's the case. But who knows what's going to happen? We won't find out until 1 o'clock coming up on Sunday. All right, your reaction, 641-1010. That's the best way to get in. We're going to hear from Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence coming up. We're also going to hear from you as we go tonight up until 9 o'clock.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, make sure you're with us tomorrow, 6 to 8, live from Mr. Chubby's. That'll be out in Ponte Vedra. 2-for-1 drafts, 2-for-1 pitchers. That includes Miller Lite, $3 Wells, $3 Wines. A lot of good stuff scheduled tomorrow, right when we get off air. First NFL game of the season. I mean, how cool is that? College football didn't even schedule a game. They said have it. Bucks, Cowboys. Really hard to repeat. We haven't seen it since 03-04. Are you ready for Friday? Because Friday we're on 3-6. We're on the AM only, I think, for 9 more weeks on Friday, 3-6. Okay, on 1010. And then when high school's done, we'll get back to our regular time, which is at 6 o'clock. But on Friday, RJ, we will be making our predictions. All right, we'll go through the divisional winners. We'll pick an AFC, an NFC champion, and point to a Super Bowl winner. Are you ready for that?
I'm ready to go. Yeah.
You could do it right now.
No, I couldn't do it right now. I need to take a deep dive.
Well, you better get on it. You got tonight. You got tomorrow. And we're going to do that on Friday, 3-6. Again, we'll be on the AM. That is on 1010. So look forward to talking to you at that particular time. Last year I had Green Bay over Kansas City. Didn't work out too well. We'll see what happens here. My goodness, Miguel Cabrera, 3 more hits tonight. He keeps it up, man. He's going to get to 3,000. I think he needed 33 coming in. He did. So now he's at 2970. So he's 30 hits away. Of course, he got his 500th home run. He's up to 502 there. But this game in the sixth inning, 3 hits tonight for Cabrera. So an opportunity for at least one more at bat as well. Man, you know, baseball really blew it again today. I love baseball. I'm not going to talk a lot about it with you during football season because I do understand the audience. But how do you drop the Hall of Fame induction today on a Wednesday in the middle of the afternoon? I mean, that's criminal. And, you know, Derek Jeter, I'm a Bostonian, but for him and Larry Walker and Ted Simmons, and I forget who the other, it was an older gentleman who's long passed. But how can baseball continue to make mistakes like this? They had that platform on July 4th, and there was only like 3 games scheduled. Instead of making everyone play and ramming baseball down your throat, and they missed it. You know, and they came in this year, and 1/3 through the season, Rob Manfred, you know, changed the gripping of the ball and taking away the substance, which I understand baseball should do, but you can't throughout the course of the season. Look what happened with Tyler Glasnow in Tampa. He had to change the way he gripped the ball, and he's gone for the year. So baseball just, they can't get out of their own way. They have no leadership. It's a great sport. There's a little bit of a renewed electricity in the game. You know, the explosion of these younger players where now you can hit a home run, you can stop, you can stare, you can bat flip, and you're not going to catch one in the ribs the next time up. It's now becoming part of the game. And, you know, old school America is going to hate it. I've learned to absolutely accept it because I think that's bringing in the younger audience. I have no problem with celebration. I wish we had more of it, whether it's a touchdown celebration, whether it's a dunk, whether it's a hockey goal, or whether it's a home run. The only thing I've never understood about celebrations is, you know, when you're down by a couple of touchdowns, you shouldn't do it. If you're down by 20 points on the hardwood and you get a Daryl Duncan's type dunk, you probably shouldn't stop and stare. And same in baseball. You know, if you're down 7-1, you clear the fence, you know, it's now 7-2, you probably shouldn't go through all those shenanigans. To me, it's about winning. But I wish we had more of that. Gosh, did baseball blow it today? I mean, Derek Jeter, for crying out loud. Inducted the Hall of Fame. My guess is that there's a large portion of listeners right now that have no idea what I'm talking about. Were you aware of that today? Did you do it in any updates or anything?
I didn't have any updates today. Somebody did post, however, about, you know, like Barry Bonds probably wondering why he's still not inducted into the Hall, yada, yada, yada.
Well, you need to put him in, too. You need to put in Barry Bonds, and you need to put in Roger Clemens, and you need to put in Manny Ramirez, and you need to put in Alex Rodriguez. You need to put in Rafael Palmeiro. If you want to say home run hitters only, McGuire and Sosa shouldn't go in, all right. Now, let's have a six-pack argument on that. But the other guys I mentioned, put them in. They're Hall of Famers. And now we've even got Curt Schilling, because of his political beliefs, he's not in the Hall of Fame. I mean, politics have reached that with the Baseball Writers Association of America saying, we don't like your political views. We're not going to vote you in. He's the only Major League Baseball player with more than 3,000 career strikeouts who's not in the Hall of Fame, not named Roger Clemens. Everyone else is in. There's less than 3,000 career strikeout guys, and there are guys with 3,000 hits. Do you know that? And Scherzer's going to get it for your Dodgers next time out. He's 8 away from 3,000. So anyway, I love the game, and I never understand when companies, especially like this billion-dollar companies, have an opportunity to do something that is so good, and they blow it. And you can't put it on a Saturday now or a Sunday now. You blew it. It's football season. You should have done it a month ago. It's a real easy conversation. It's, football is here in a month. Let's go to Cooperstown and induct the 2020 class in. And let's do it when, right before football starts, when sports fans are starving for a good story. Let's give them Derek Jeter. Let's give them Larry Walker. Let's induct them into the baseball. No, they drop it the second week of September on a Wednesday afternoon? Where if you grew up in New York and you're a Derek Jeter fan, you're in school? Or if you're out in the West Coast and whatever, and you're a Yankee, I mean, look at all the Yankee fans down here in our state. How could they make such a mistake, an egregious mistake? Am I overdoing it? I don't think so. I mean, come on, baseball. Grab some leadership. Jaguars only put two players on the injury report today. This is a very healthy team. Trey Herndon with the knee did not practice. It appears he's not going to go, but, you know, indications would be that he's not going to miss 3 weeks because they would have put him on the IR like they did with Tavon Austin. After September 1st, remember the injured reserve rules have changed. You must sit out a minimum of 3 weeks. You know, Travis Etienne, who was placed on the injured reserve list in the month of August, under those set of circumstances, you were gone for the remainder of the year. But anyone who goes on the IR now must sit out a minimum of 3 weeks. So nothing like that has happened, as far as we know, with Trey Herndon. Really, the biggest decision is Tyson Campbell with the calf, and he was limited today. And it'd be great to have him out there with C.J. Henderson and Shaq Griffin. And we'll see what happens in that contain. Rayshon Jenkins, as we know. Matter of fact, those two were named as captains today. Why don't we get to that? Number one, if you missed it, Urban Meyer announced seven captains earlier today during his press conference.
Josh Allen, Shaq Griffin, Miles Jack, Rayshon Jenkins, Marvin Jones, Trevor Lawrence, and Brandon Linder. And I know some people do two or three. I've always, the voting, the players voted on it, and there was a little bit of a separation. There are two other guys that are right there, but I always like a lot of captains. I've always done that.
You can't be surprised at all with Jenkins, Griffin, and Jones Jr. Obvious leadership from the moment they got here. And I talk about the Malik Jackson deal often. And then when Jared Odrick made a jackass out of himself on the sideline in San Diego, and I was doing a weekly show with Malik Jackson, I asked him, and he said, he's a grown-ass man. I'm not going to go up and tell him what to do. I had only been here for a couple of games. I love Malik Jackson. He's one of my all-time favorite guys who's played here. And he was a great teammate, and I think he turned into a great leader. But he was not a leader the moment he got here, the way that Rayshon Jenkins is and Shaq Griffin is and Marvin Jones Jr., the way that they are. Right? Great leaders. Trevor Lawrence becoming a captain. He's never played a game before. Let's hear from Trevor. He was announced earlier today, and this was his reaction to be one of seven guys who was voted in as a captain.
It's a really cool feeling, especially as a younger guy, just having that support from my teammates. And really, like I said, with being the named starter and now a captain, nothing changes, same expectation. And now it's time to go out there and win some games. But I'm really excited. It's definitely an honor. It's a cool moment for me to be named a captain with those other guys, just a bunch of great guys in the locker room.
So you have returners like Miles Jack, who's absolutely one of the major defensive leaders. And Josh Allen, okay, very important. And Brandon Linder on that offensive line. But, Trevor Lawrence, to me, that speaks volumes. And this was voted on by teammates. So I think it's an encouraging sign for the respect that he has already earned in that locker room to never have played a game. And he has already been, nominated as one of the seven captains for the Jaguars. All right, we got much more to get into. We'll take you up until 9 o'clock tonight. Best way to get a hold of us is on the text line. That is 641-1010. You can also get us on Twitter, Blue1010XL.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Really studying Houston today, trying to get a good feel for them before our broadcast on Sunday and, of course, the matchup. That defensive line, man, they're all gone outside of Whitney Merciless. Of course, J.J. Watt is in Arizona. They've been without Jadeveon Clowney. He's gone. Jarrell Casey announced his retirement. And, last year he went out west to Denver. But that was an intimidating defensive line for, a long period of time. And they're all gone. Let me see here. Whitney Merciless is not 100%. Let me find that for you here real quick. If you give me just 1 second. Here we go. Injury report today. Whitney Merciless, thigh. All right. Kevin Pierre-Louis, thigh. Defensive lineman Malik Collins, who plays on that line with Whitney Merciless, knee. All three limited today. Deshaun Watson obviously didn't practice. said it's not injury related. What should we say for Deshaun Watson? How should we label that?
Busy getting a massage.
Very good. You should have created a rim shot for you there. That would have been outstanding. Lonnie Johnson, a DB, with a thigh as well. He is he's a backup safety behind Justin Reed and Eric Murray. So, you know, you would think that most teams would be relatively healthy with the extra week off and obviously preseason coming to an end. You know, something else I found today, and Hayes Carline and I talk about it in our newest installment of Death, Taxes, and Duval. When would that be up there, young man?
Be up there at the conclusion of this show later on tonight, so expect that around 10:15, 10:30.
Are you an octopus? How do you do all these things at once?
One at a time. Just like you said, I have to do things one at a time. I can't do multiple things.
I know, but you're doing into the night, mm-hmm. and you've got pressure on you to do Compton and Company.
Mm-hmm.
You've got pressure on you to drop Death, Taxes, and Duval. You got pressure on you to line up Brad Johnson and all these others. If not, I'll start screaming, yelling up and down the hallways. And let me guess, you got to get up at 5 tomorrow to get ready to produce the drill.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, day in the life, man. I do it. I do it for everyone listening out there in Duval, man. Rock with me.
Can I buy you dinner tomorrow night at Mr. Chubby's? Can we start with some cheese bread?
Absolutely.
And a milkshake?
Yes, sir.
And you're going to want Mountain Dew?
Yes.
You're going to want wings, probably 15, teriyaki?
Need that.
All right. Anything I forgot? Maybe the pretzel bites, go back to them, or mozzarella sticks?
Nah. We go with the cheese bread. Got to have the pepperoni on top.
Come on out and see RJ. He needs a hug. The guy's doing everything around here. They're not asking you to sweep the floors on the way out, are they?
They may ask me to do that. I mean, listen, I asked for this. I asked for more opportunities. Giving me opportunities. I can't complain. I mean, you know, I can.
Let me give you a hint.
Yes.
Complaining is fun.
It can be.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It's fun. I've never met. You know what else is fun? Pouting.
Don't
be stubborn, but if you're a good pouter, it just feels good. And complaining to me, because really, and I think you would attest to this for the most part, I complain about my teams.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's fair, complaining.
Yeah, I don't sit around and complain about my life and say, man, I wish I had a full set of hair, and I wish I was 6'4",
right.
200 pounds,
yes.
And I, you know, I wish I drove around a brand new GMC truck from Key. Well, I do that, and there's plenty available right now. They're arriving daily. I love complaining about my teams. It's one of my favorite things to do. Here's one I got right here, as a matter of fact. Guy tells me that in-game coaching was not bad with the Florida State-Notre Dame game the other night. And I'm like, well, you've got to be freaking kidding me. I mean, they blitzed on 3rd-and-17 from Notre Dame's 22. You play simple prevent defense and expect the draw or the screen, you get a Notre Dame punt. Instead, it looked like Notre Dame invented the wheel by throwing a simple screen. And it went for 55 yards. That's bad coaching. Back coaching is that very first drive by Notre Dame, and they took it all the way down the field against Florida State, despite the fact that the crowd was up and ready to go. Michael Mayer was wide open. Okay? There wasn't a guy within 20 yards of Michael Mayer. He's your number one responsibility defensively. He's maybe the best tight end in football. Florida State in this game allowed 12 passes of 15 yards or more. Think about that. 12 big plays. That's bad coaching. That's Adam Fuller. I didn't even get to the offense. I didn't even get to any of that. I'm just going to one side of the ball. Defensively. Anyway, I found this today, and I thought it was really intriguing. Urban Meyer has stressed incredible importance to the special teams. And, you know, I think it's a huge factor. I really do. But I do wonder, is there a little bit too much of it there? The kick game is totally gone in the NFL. Now, I'm not talking about field goals. That is still a huge part of it. But kicking off, for the most part, is done. I mean, you kick it into the end zone, and that's it. It's a touchback. You don't hear a lot about kick returns anymore. So what does that mean? Well, the kick game is gone for kickoffs and kick returns. Therefore, that leaves you with field goals, which is a totally different animal. And as you know, when your opponent is trying to field goal, your defense stays on the field. So you're basically down to punting. Punt, punt return. In the National Football League, from 2017 to a year ago, punts per team per game have gone down from 4.8 in 2017 to 3.7 in 2020. So I don't want to diminish the importance of special teams, but man, there has been a lot said about Jamal Agnew and his return ability, and Rudy Ford as perhaps the fastest gunner in the NFL. There was never a question about Andrew Wingard making this team. Urban Meyer loves him as a special team player. Right now he's listed as your starting strong safety. I will still be very surprised if he's out there first defensively for the Jaguars on Sunday. I just don't see it happening. Daniel Thomas, I imagine, is going to be the gunner on the other side, right? Both gunners, Rudy Ford, Daniel Thomas. Have to believe that. You know, you got other guys, whether it's Dakota Allen or whether it is Chris Claybrooks, Laurente McCray. What wide receiver is going to be able to help you out in this particular aspect? So, you know, you can only dress 46. You can bring up two off the practice squad. That's 48. But again, I mean, you're talking about 3.7 punts a team a game. All right, you add that up. That's 7.5 plays a game. You know, 3.7 punt returns, 3.7 punts. You're talking about 7.5 to 8 plays a game in which you're really going to need your special teams. Because kickoffs are virtually done now, historically speaking, in the NFL. All right. Before I get out of here, and we may touch upon this tomorrow, this is a cool nugget that I think listeners will love. I'm trying to remember where I found this a little bit earlier today. I usually write everything down and credit who I get it from. But in this case, I don't know, maybe I was barreling down the road and I had a pad of paper. I just wrote it down. And I was, you know, trying to be like everyone else. And that is, you know, working with their self. I'm just kidding. I'm just being a smartass. I would never do that. In the last 18 years in the NFL, in 16 of those 18 years, there has been a team that has gone from worst to first in their division. All right? Your 8 bottom feeders in 2020, obviously the Jaguars. In the East, the Jets, the Bengals in the North, Broncos out West. Other conference, Eagles in the East, Lions, Falcons in the South, 49ers out West. Where do you rank the Jaguars in that category? I think they're right there, if not ahead of the Eagles. I think they're right there, if not ahead of the Lions. I think they're right there, if not ahead of the Falcons. 49ers, I'm going to give an edge there. When healthy, that's a real good team, particularly on defense. Jets, nope. Bengals, we'll see week four, but nope. Broncos, well, we'll see in 9 days. Pretty interesting. 16 out of the last 18 years, a team that finished last in their division has come back and finished first in their division 1 year later. What an unbelievable statistic. That's why the NFL, it's just another reason why it's so far ahead of everything else. Because you can change the fortunes of your organization around in a year, if not two. It's a real quick fix in the NFL. Thank you to all our guests. Brad Johnson, former Seminole, former Super Bowl quarterback, winning quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Thank you to John Osher. Thank you to Denny Thompson. Remember, Denny gave us some breaking news tonight. Carson Beck, expected to be the starting quarterback for Georgia coming up this weekend. JT Daniels dealing with an oblique injury. Make sure you join us tomorrow, 6 to 8, live from Mr. Chubby's in Ponte Vedra. Remember, we'll be on 3 to 6 Friday, the AM only. That is 3 to 6 on Friday. Compton and Company's coming up right now. Thank you to RJ Saunders. My name is Rick Ballew. We'll talk tomorrow at 6.